Wars have killed over 100 million people in the past century alone. Every leader claims to desire peace, every nation professes peaceful intentions, yet conflicts persist with grim regularity. This paradox has puzzled philosophers, statesmen, and ordinary citizens for millennia. The answer lies not in a single cause, but in understanding three distinct levels where conflict originates: within human nature itself, within the structure of governments, and within the anarchic system that governs how nations interact. Each level reveals different truths about why peace remains so elusive, and why our most well-intentioned solutions often fail. The framework for understanding these levels emerged from decades of studying Western political thought, distilling centuries of wisdom into a coherent structure that explains why, despite humanity's stated preferences for peace, we cannot seem to escape war's gravitational pull. Even today's leaders grapple with these same fundamental tensions when crisis erupts. Perhaps wars happen because humans are selfish, aggressive, and prone to stupidity. If we could just improve humanity's moral character, peace would naturally follow. Proposed solutions vary wildly. Some advocate education. Enlightened people would reject war once they understood its horrors. Others push for spiritual renewal, pointing to groups like the Quakers. Still others suggest channeling aggression into constructive alternatives, challenging civic projects, providing a moral equivalent of war without bloodshed. This view splits into optimists, who believe human nature can be improved, and pessimists, like Reinhold Niebuhr, who argue that human pride and self-interest inevitably corrupt all our advances. But here's the fatal weakness. Blaming war on human nature creates an unfalsifiable theory where evidence gets twisted to fit predetermined conclusions. Real opportunities for peace come from understanding secondary causes, the social and political structures we can actually modify. Whether you believe humans can be perfected or are permanently flawed, both positions ultimately point toward the same conclusion: we must focus on changing structures, not souls. Modern behavioral scientists blame human nature, but confuse knowledge with implementation. They fall into the rationalist fallacy, assuming that knowing how to end war means we've solved it. The real challenge isn't understanding behavior, it's getting the world to actually change. This approach faces three obstacles. Cultural change requires extraordinary time. Instituting change within resistant societies presents massive political challenges, and coordinating change across independent states creates impossible coordination problems. Who would enforce psychological screening of political leaders globally? Many proposals depend on prior international agreement or world government, essentially placing all difficulties in if clauses. One scholar argued that changing expectations about war would eliminate it, but only when people are fully confident that international organizations can eradicate war. This is like saying poverty would end if everyone just had more money. The fundamental problem? Behavioral scientists transfer domestic insights to international relations without accounting for political contexts. Without proper political framing, their insights remain like pearls lying around loose, potentially valuable but largely unusable. While human nature reveals certain truths, states as containers fundamentally shape how that nature manifests. Just as water becomes steam or explosive depending on its container, human behavior varies based on political frameworks. 19th-century liberals believed individual initiative drives society and competition regulates it. They made the good state a limited state, responsible primarily for security and property protection. In international relations, they assumed an objective harmony of interests. Nations gain through free exchange rather than conquest. War could never pay because it destroyed rather than created wealth. Free trade would bind nations together, making war obsolete. The problem emerged when liberal theory met reality. Non-interventionist liberals would only use force to defend against direct invasion, a strategy that worked for geographically isolated nations like Britain and the United States, but became dangerous when universalized. As Giuseppe Mazzini asked, what sense does it make to preach laissez-faire in international relations when not all states will practice it? Liberals wanted the benefits of law without necessary enforcement mechanisms. In an anarchic international system, states use force when they value objectives over peace. Since each state judges its own cause, all must maintain readiness to counter force or accept vulnerability. Jean-Jacques Rousseau parallels states with individuals in nature. In nature, liberty is constrained only by individual strength. Civil society transforms this. Natural liberty yields to civil liberty, and possession becomes legitimate property protected by law. States undergo no equivalent transformation. They remain in nature relative to each other, creating the security dilemma. Actions enhancing security often threaten others, triggering arms races. Even defensive measures can appear offensive, creating spirals of mutual suspicion. Economic examples illustrate this trap. Domestically, competition's harmful results trigger regulation, but expecting countries to formulate policies benefiting all states is fundamentally utopian. The 1970s oil crisis showed voluntary restraints fail without enforcement. The Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1930 triggered retaliatory measures, deepening the Great Depression. Even when reduced trade barriers would benefit everyone, states remain preoccupied with relative gains, whether competitors might benefit disproportionately more. Balance of power shapes international relations daily. While states pursue economic welfare and other goals, ignoring power dynamics invites disaster like card players refusing coalitions while others unite against them. As Clausewitz noted, social institutions can moderate competition, enabling cooperation like the Concert of Europe, 1815 to 1848. Pre-WI alliances created rigid two-block structures where mobilization meant inevitable war. By 1914, the Serbian crisis entangled prestige and security, forcing Russian reaction to Austrian aggression, transforming local conflict into continental catastrophe. Conversely, Chamberlain's 1930s appeasement failed to recognize that strengthening Nazi Germany would upset Europe's balance. The Munich Agreement, 1938, shows how excessive pacifism invites aggression, while excessive belligerence provokes preventative war. Balance of power politics remains inherently risky, but ignoring it proves riskier. Modern applications appear everywhere, from NATO's collective security to multipolar dynamics between the United States, China, and Russia, evident in debates about nuclear proliferation and regional security architectures. No single explanation suffices for war. Bismarck worried about Russian instability, while Mill justified England's inaction by citing Austria's value as an ally. Both considered multiple perspectives, though Bismarck emphasized Europe's chessboard, while Mill focused on qualities of peoples and governments. The state system itself conditions action. What might be morally good for an individual could invite war when performed by a state. War occurs not from accidental causes like human irrationality or state defects, but because the framework permits it. Like bank robbery increasing when law enforcement weakens, wars occur because there is nothing to prevent them. Removing one cause won't eliminate an effect with multiple causes. Addressing one while neglecting others may worsen things, as when Western democracies' peace inclinations emboldened Hitler. Fear of modern weapons alone cannot establish peace. Each technological advance has found prophets proclaiming war's end, yet all proved false. As Hamilton and Jay explained, international anarchy explains international war. Until we transform the anarchic structure of international relations itself, war remains not an aberration, but a logical possibility built into the system.